You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The disclosure this week by the website WikiLeaks and a number of major newspapers of over 90,000 classified documents related to the U.S. military campaign in Afghanistan has been called one of the largest leaks in military history. To help put it into perspective, we've invited Neil Sheehan, formerly of the New York Times, and the man Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers to join us. His reporting on those secret government documents eventually won his paper the Pulitzer Prize. Mr. Sheehan is also the author of numerous books, his most recent being A Fiery Peace in a Cold War. I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
All week,
glad to be back.
All week, commentators have been framing the WikiLeaks disclosure of the Afghan war logs by comparing it to the Pentagon Papers. Is it a fair comparison?
It really isn't, because this is not the Pentagon. The Pentagon Papers was an archive of decision-making at the highest level, at the, you know, the Secretary of Defense, the presidential level, throughout the Vietnam War, beginning with American involvement in Indochina during the Roosevelt years. And what this is on-the-ground stuff. This is the nitty-gritty, the grist of the war. The on-the-ground military traffic doesn't mean it's without value. It's got a lot of value to it.
Well, the one was a history commissioned by the Secretary of Defense then, Robert McNamara. These are direct reports, as you say, from the field. But both of them, I would assume, have their strengths and weaknesses that neither give a complete picture of a war.
Well, yeah, right. This has strengths, and the strength of this is that it brings the war home to Americans in a tangible way. We tend now, under current conditions, the middle class in this country isn't involved in our wars, except financially. They pay their taxes, but their sons are not involved. It's entirely volunteer armed forces, and you don't get a sense of the war in a real way, in a tangible way. What this does is bring it home in a tangible way. It shows, you know, how difficult, terribly difficult the Afghan war is. All these ethnic rivalries, the Tajiks don't like the Pashtuns don't like the Hazaras. You've got religious differences. And this information brings this stuff home in a really acute way, and it's valuable stuff.
The Atlantic magazine's James Fallows wrote this week that, I'm quoting, "What I'll be looking for in the WikiLeaks documents is evidence that the project we're now committed to in Afghanistan could ever have worked or might still work now." Weren't those the questions that the Pentagon Papers, in essence, were asking about Vietnam, whether the project we had committed to in Southeast Asia was ever going to work?
Well, they were a history of what was done. That was a logical question that arose as a result of it. But there were, for example, the value of the Pentagon Papers was showing the extent to which we'd been misled and lied to by Lyndon Johnson, for example, manipulating the Congress, the Senate, and the House into giving him a blank check declaration of war in the Tonkin Gulf incident of August 64. What this is the on the ground military traffic that shows you, yes, you can ask yourself that question after you read these stories. In the Times, for instance, is distillation of the leak. This is a very difficult situation, and you have these American generals like Petraeus, who are can-do men. Their nature, their training, all tends to make them never want to admit anything is impossible. But you see when you read this material just how difficult that war is, and we'll be very lucky indeed to pull off success in Afghanistan.
A number of people have said that most of the disclosures in the Afghan war logs are nothing new. So why is everyone from President Obama to President Karzai of Afghanistan condemned their being made public?
Because this is a leak on a grand scale.
Just because it sets a precedent?
I don't think it's the Pentagon Papers was a precedent. it's on a grand scale, and they try. It's in the nature of governments to try to stop this kind of thing, particularly when it's on this kind of scale. It's in their nature. They don't want this kind of stuff being leaked regularly. Now, I don't see anything in what's been published in the papers that or broadcast on the radio that would compromise military security or put lives in danger. I don't know if that maybe the raw documents that were leaked may contain information that does that. I'd be skeptical until it happened, but until I saw it. But it's in the nature of the beast. They don't like these kind of things, even though there's no major revelations involved.
We're talking with Neil Sheehan, whose latest book is A Fiery Peace in Cold War. We're talking about the WikiLeaks disclosure, also published in the New York Times, Der Spiegel, and The Guardian. Of how many documents did I say? 60,000 documents?
90,000
documents. Well, maybe there's nothing new, but there's some really embarrassing stuff here. Several of the logs show that the Army Psychological Operations Units pay Afghan media, mainly radio stations, to run friendly stories. Several logs also show U.S. military personnel apparently referring to Afghan reporters as our journalists and directing them in how to do their jobs. Well, years ago, the military came under fire for paying Iraqi newspapers for friendly coverage, but it seems that didn't prevent the military from doing something similar in Afghanistan.
No, they will do it. I mean, now that sort of thing has been reported before, but it hasn't been, as I said, the value of this material is that it brings these things home in a tangible way. If this has been done before, it's been reported before, but here you are, you're seeing it in a very concrete, specific example, and that's very valuable. And the Times published a photograph of Taliban riding around in a brand new Ford pickup truck, and this material was, I mean, the truck was allegedly given to them or sold to them, and that's going on. It's been reported before, but to see it in a tangible way is very. I mean, usually what happened, we ended up in Vietnam arming the Viet Cong. We passed out good semi-automatic and automatic weapons to the Saigon side, machine guns, Garand rifles from World War II, and they ended up losing them to the Viet Cong, the other side. When you have an insurgency, the most motivated groups often ends up with the resources that you pour in there. And, you know, you see this, we know this kind of thing goes on, but to see it is very important. You get a sense of reality out of this.
So you're suggesting all of these kinds of wars are similar. How often when people talk about Afghanistan, they compare it to Vietnam, Iraq as well, and the word quagmire always comes up.
Well, it's understandable because, as I said, you have. I mean, what have we got in Afghanistan? We've got a president there, Hamid Karzai, who's corrupt, or if he's not corrupt, he tolerates corruption at the highest levels in his government, including his brother. You've got, as I said, all of these ethnic divisions. You've got a highly motivated fanatics on the other side, in the Taliban. You've got the Pakistanis who are playing double games. They protested the report again, which has come up again in the WikiLeaks thing, that their intelligence service is working with the Taliban. Well, that's been reported before, but again, it brings it home in a clear way. Just who can you trust? This is a very tricky business, and the Pakistan is supposed to be our allies. Well, they're also playing games with the other guy because they want to end up with influence in Afghanistan rather than the Indians. They're principal rivals in South Asia.
Well, how much of this is also just the White House being embarrassed that it can't, this prevents it from being able to put the Afghan war in, put a positive face on the Afghan war? No one scouring the WikiLeaks documents so far has produced anything on the scale of the famous 1965 McNaughton memo, which stated that 70% of our reason for staying in Vietnam was to avoid a humiliating U.S. defeat.
Right. Now, John McNaughton was an assistant secretary, a deputy secretary of defense. He was the secretary of McNamara's deputy for foreign policy. That was a really cynical. What struck one home when one read that memorandum, and it stands out in my mind today, was how cynical the business was. I mean, we were getting all these Vietnamese killed as well as our own people for these abstract, cynical outcome, and it was horrible to read that.
The Afghan reports were listed as secret. The Pentagon Papers were top secret. Does that mean that they had higher quality or accuracy?
They had higher quality in the sense that they were, as I said, a history of decision making at the highest level. You had, the proof. You had the proof of it, and the President Johnson deceiving us in the Tonkin Gulf incident. General Westmoreland totally deluded that he was winning the war when in fact he was losing the war. The quality was quite different in the sense that it was an archive of decision-making at the highest level, and the extent to which the country had been misled by our highest officials, by the president and those who served directly under him. But this material shouldn't be denigrated because it has value. It shows you, as I said, it brings the war home, and the American public ought to be conscious of what we're doing overseas. You shouldn't be detached from it as we are. We have an army now, and a Marine Corps, which consists of young people, mostly men, but also some women, who join up because they either want to be a soldier or a Marine, or just to be one, or because they want to get an education and they think, well, it won't happen to me. I won't get crippled. I won't get killed. I'll come through it all right. Nobody's sending out draft notices to the sons of the middle class. So it's very important that people be involved in this thing because we're killing people over there.
Do you think that WikiLeaks' Julian Assange was thinking about the release of the Pentagon Papers to the Times when he shared this information with the Times, Der Spiegel and the Guardian?
Well, he's obviously got an axe to grind. I mean, he's released material about the Iraq War, which he was also opposed to. He's obviously opposed to this war. But, of course, you get material from people who have axes to grind. That the test is the value of the material itself, the veracity of the material itself, not the motive of the person who's leaking it to you.
Well, Daniel Ellsberg had stopped believing in the war in Vietnam. He had an axe to grind as well, didn't he?
That's right. But that doesn't. That doesn't affect the quality of the information we got that the Times got. I mean, A.M. Rosenthal, who was the executive editor of the Times, was a hawk on the war in Vietnam. But Abe said once when we were in the Hilton Hotel, hiding away in the Hilton, working on this material for 2 months. Abe said one day when he was over there, look, a lot of people whose political views I don't agree with are going to use this for their own reasons, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that this material belongs out in the public domain, and we've got to get it out there. So the quality of the information is what counts, and this information is terribly useful.
My guest is Neil Sheehan, the reporter who originally received the Pentagon Papers and has become a historian since he left the New York Times. His latest book, A Fiery Peace in a Cold War. Do you think that the release of the Pentagon Papers would have been different if you were working in today's media climate?
Well, the Supreme Court decision might be different. It's very hard to tell. If you got a leak on a scale of this one or on a scale of the Pentagon Papers, you are really bound to publish it because if you're a major newspaper, how are you going to look like if it comes out later on that you didn't, that you were a coward, that you flinched? You're really bound to publish this kind of thing, and it's your duty. It's your place in society. I'm not sure that the Supreme Court would have. This is a very conservative Supreme Court, although they've been good on the First Amendment.
Well, even back then, Daniel Ellsberg has talked about to me about pretty much feeling that he was going to go to prison, and Julian Assange has expressed concern about some governments coming after him for any number of the releases that WikiLeaks has put out there.
Well, they might, and that's the risk that anybody runs who leaks. He's done it in a very public way. And he lives in Britain, where you could never have published this information originally.
Yeah.
The Brits have an Official Secrets Act, which forbids publication of anything classified. You can't do that in this country because of the First Amendment. Thank God the Founding Fathers, which says that Congress shall pass no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press. Thank God the Founding Fathers made that part of our Constitution. But yes, he runs a risk. Anybody, the leaker always runs a major risk, if not criminal prosecution, certainly administrative punishment.
The New York Times' David Carr tweeted on Sunday night that the WikiLeaks introduces asymmetries into the equation that have the government and the mainstream media back on their heels. Has this disclosure radically changed the media landscape as you see it?
I don't think so. I mean,
because we have the world's first stateless news organization, as WikiLeaks has been described.
Yes, but the material still has to be digested. It's got to be put in a form that people can understand, and whether it's on radio or television or in print, if you threw all this stuff out there, people wouldn't read it. They wouldn't be able to comprehend it. I mean, getting through 90,000 pages of day-to-day military traffic on the ground, the nitty-gritty stuff of the war. Now that you have to. That's why it obviously took the Times and the Guardian time to work this material through, find the best stuff, organize it for readers, and get it out. For instance, there was a very touching, moving story about that outpost where seven men got killed. That isolated outpost of some idiot upstairs had put on low ground outside beyond artillery support, and 30 to 40 minutes from air support, and the place was attacked, damn near overrun. I mean, that's the sort of thing. You have to find it, put it together. You have to find it in the 90,000 pages. You have to organize it. There's still a place for the news media in doing this.
Although I have been interested in the contradictions I mentioned some earlier. On the one hand, the Obama administration says these show nothing new. On the other hand, they assert that the disclosure puts personnel in danger. At the same time, the president has also said that much of the information in this leak has already been addressed by the new Afghan strategy that he unveiled last year.
Well, again, you know, most of the material is covered in the Bush years, when Afghanistan was being neglected, when the war in Afghanistan was second place to the war in Iraq. But the reaction of his reaction and the reaction of the administration doesn't surprise me at all. It's normal. Governments normally the governments react this way. They don't like this kind of thing. Obviously, it shows that there's obviously a hole in their security system, and they're not going to be pleased with that.
Well, we saw support of the Vietnam War erode a lot in the aftermath of the release of the Pentagon Papers. This week, the House voted 308 to 114 to approve $59 billion. For the president's Afghan surge, although there was a split among House Democrats. Do you see things changing, or do we still have a way to go?
I don't think WikiLeaks is going to change it in any immediate sense, any more than the Pentagon Papers immediately changed the outcome of the Vietnam War. The Pentagon Papers were published in 1971. the Vietnam War was ended in 1975. What's going to finally, but of course these things tend to weaken the public's, further weaken the public support. The Afghan War is not a popular war. Most public opinion in this country seems to be very divided about it. I think what's going to finally mean success or failure there is if this goes on for another year or two and we're not getting anywhere, and it's very clear that we're not getting anywhere, then they're going to have to start getting out. And they're going to have to accept whatever they can get and get out of there. But I think it's going to be it's going to be a question of we're going to have to wait and see what. It's not going to happen immediately because you have the government of the United States, which is a very powerful government, committed to a war, and they're going to try to make it work.
Neil, thank you so much for talking with us again.
You're welcome.
Neil Sheehan's latest book from Random House is A Fiery Peace in a Cold War. ¶¶